Hey, this is Chaplain Tony Repik here. Just want to remind you that this podcast does not imply any endorsement of any commercial organization, product, or belief system.
The mission of the United States Air Force is to fly, fight, and win. Air power. Anytime, anywhere.
The Balance Podcast. Comprehensive readiness for life in and out of uniform.
Hey everybody, well, welcome to the Balance Podcast. I'm glad you're tuning in today. This is Chaplain Tony Repik coming at you from Diddle Air National Guard Base with Mr. Keith Donnell today. But before we get Keith kicked off here, because today we're talking about money. So money, right? Just want to give a little blurb about the Balance Podcast. This, a couple years ago, we were engaged here and we focused the Balance Podcast around four components of airman fitness. Comprehensive airman fitness. So mind, mental, physical, spiritual, and social. Those four domains. And with a topic like money today that we're gonna talk about, obviously it impacts those four areas. We'll kind of go through that a little bit today, Keith. I'm glad you're able to join us today. Keith is a huge asset to the Pennsylvania Army and Air National Guard, and actually any service member in general. So just in a few minutes here, I'm gonna let Keith kind of give a little bit of background of his information, but I kind of want to start off this this podcast by saying this today, and this is just some facts I'm going to lay on the table, all right? So studies show that over 50% of American adults are financially illiterate. 50%, which is mind-boggling, right? So kind of want to use that as sort of a segue into our conversation today, but again, I said I was going to introduce Keith, which I'm going to do right now. Keith, I'm glad you're here today. You can sit down and bring all this experience you have. So just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you offer, your background and what you offer to service members and their families.
Okay. Well, first off, thanks for having me, Chaplain. You and I talk a lot, but it's great to have an opportunity to sit down and actually kind of talk a little bit about what I do and how I help service members. So I'm a personal financial counselor under the Department of Defense contract. And so I work as a contractor, and I always tell the service members, I'm not here to sell life insurance or mutual funds or anything. I get paid at the end of the day by the same people that pay you. And so I've been doing this for about, not 13, 14 years now. And, it started out, it was just me, and I worked out of Fort Indiantown Gap, which is kind of in the middle of the state, and traveled the whole state. And as you said, I work with all branches of the service, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And the whole point of it is that the Department of Defense promotes, what they call financial readiness. And financial readiness is achieved through sound personal financial management practices. Yeah. And so, as you said earlier, the financial literacy part, where 50% of the respondents are, financially illiterate, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's half of it, right? And so financial literacy is the terms and the concepts and understanding, what mutual funds are and what savings rates are and, how to handle debt and things like that. And that's one part of it. And then the other part of it is the personal financial management. And so the literacy is the knowing, and the personal financial management is the doing.
How to execute it.
And so those two things come together to create what you and I have talked about, is this wealth engine concept, where, we're all wealth engines. People don't realize it. But the question is who are we being a wealth engine for? Mm-hmm. Are we being a wealth engine for ourselves and our families through sound personal financial management practices, right, executed over time? Or are we being a wealth engine for someone else by getting in debt over our heads and paying 22% interest and all that? When you're paying interest rates that high, that's going to someone, and someone is raking in those profits, and it's benefiting them and their families. And so when you live in that kind of a way, right, high debt, high problems, you're being a wealth engine for someone else other than yourself. Yeah. And so I've been doing this for about 13 years. And at first I was the first one, the only one in the entire state of Pennsylvania. And now there's about five of us.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. So that's a sign of the Department of Defense's commitment to financial readiness.
It's interesting you mentioned the commitment, because I saw recently the DoD came out with, and the Air Force in particular, I mentioned the Balanced Podcast, we talk about this four domains of airman fitness, right? Mm-hmm. They're talking about adding a fifth, finances, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I saw recently. Now, I think finances fit, though, under these, because as you've been working here with service members, you know that security clearances could be an issue when your finances aren't in order. I know as a chaplain, and our leaders know that when service members get themselves jammed up, their family stability at home is all out of whack. Mental health challenges, right? There's even spiritual challenges, because if you're not living out the character of who you are, and you're gambling and blowing money and when you shouldn't be, and saving and learning how to budget, if you will, more, create cash flow, that's a problem. And the one area might not be that fits today would be the physical aspect. So finances may be that fifth pillar that, who knows, the DoD could capture and maybe want to drive home. But
right.
But again, Keith, I appreciate you being here. I do know that, if you let the audience know too, I know a little bit about your background before this, but you worked up on Wall Street for a while. So again, I love how you said this, because it's true. You're not here to sell anything. You're not an insurance person. You're not making a profit off of us. You're actually here to help us, to your point, become wealth engines. Talk a little bit about your experience though, out there in New York City, and what you did at the stock exchange and everything else that you were doing there.
Sure. Well, in the financial services industry itself, I mean, you name it, I've pretty much done it. I started at Merrill Lynch in the Philadelphia area back in 1987. And I was there for about 8 years. And then I moved from there to Manhattan. And I worked for a bank in Manhattan for about another 12 years. And I covered the U.S., Latin America, traveled, you know, around the world. It was an incredible experience. And I was actually there on 9/11, and the person I rode up with that day, we had, you know, I always commuted from Philadelphia, and the person I, you know, we had rode the train together for about 7 years, and he died that day, and they never even found a trace of him.
Is that right?
And not a trace, yeah. And so, but at that point, you know, when we started gearing up for, you know, the wars in the Middle East, and I always wanted to try to do my part to work with service members, but I couldn't figure out how you know, how to do all
kind of niche thing.
Yeah. And so after about 15 years in Manhattan, I came back to Philadelphia and started my own financial planning practice. And I don't know how or from where, but I just got an email that said, "Hey, do you want to work with the military?"
Is that right?
I don't know how that happened. Yeah. And I thought I would just do like a briefing here and there, you know, talk a little bit about personal financial management. But I wound up getting, you know, sucked in, if you will, and started doing it full time, and been doing it ever since. And I love doing it, because as you said earlier, you know, service members, it's different, you know, I mean, especially the National Guard and the Reserve. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to live your life in such a way where at a moment's notice, you have to pick up and maybe go to the other side of the world. Sure. Then I was in the Marine Corps years ago, and I was in the Marine Corps Air Wing, and the squadron I was in, we deployed a lot. And in those days, it was just a matter of, what do I do with my car? You know, 17, 18, 19, mm-hmm. 20 years old, not married, no children, and we could pick up and go to the other side of the world, and it was no thing. You know, and stay for as long as we needed to. But with the Guard, I mean, you have people that have what I say like a life in full effect, meaning, you know, they've got a spouse, they've got children in school, they own a home, they may even own a second piece of real estate, and they've got to manage their finances so that they can pick up and be gone, and things still have to function here. They can't close up shop. So I try to bring all that experience. And the last thing I'll say about experience is that what I try to bring to the table is this. When I started at Merrill Lynch in 1987, not to give them a plug, but just to create.
That's where you work. You're just, yeah, exactly.
And when I started there, they handed me a telephone and a desk and said, "Go find rich people and go convince them right? to invest money with you." Yeah, and in 87, you could still cold call and pick up the phone right. "Hi, this is Keith Dunnell from Merrill Lynch, and I want to talk to you about blah, blah, blah." And, you know, they would talk to you, and I kind of built a business that way. But what was really happening as I look back on it, and I didn't realize it at the time, in those days, it was the World War II generation that were my clients. Those were the people that had the money at that time. They were all in their 60s, late 60s, early 60s, and they had a very specific attitude about money, and they taught me. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know what a stockbroker did until I took that job. Mm-hmm. But they taught me. And when I would call, if I hit on somebody that was in the Marine Corps, and these guys were in the Marine Corps during World War II, and they would go, oh, yeah, they'd come right in and they'd open an account with me. And then they would teach me how the economy worked, how the world worked. And so when I look back on it, that was, you know, 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the way I talk about what I do is I started a conversation 35 years ago with wealthy people, not people that become wealthy because they could throw a football better than anybody else or hit a baseball better,
yeah,
or sing and dance better. These were people that just lived their lives in a wealth building way. Mm-hmm. And I learned how they did it, what they think about, what was important to them. And there's certain defining characteristics that they all had,
yeah,
you know, and that conversation still goes on today. But that's what I try to bring to the table. And that's why when I talk about saving and investing over time, that's how those folks all built wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
And so that's what I try to bring to the table.
And you and I have had a lot of conversations, and I personally have benefited from you. Your office is right next to mine, too, so we get to talk some sports as well. We're Phillies fans and Philadelphia fans in general. But Eagles.
Sure.
The concept of becoming the wealth engine, I know that's we're going to talk a little bit about that, but we all could become a wealth engine because we can get this cash flow management thing down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like I came up with these four ideas that I learned from you and from some other gurus. It's just, I'll throw these out there, and then we can maybe get a little deeper on some practical application, because I know you have a ton of resources to offer. But here's just like something that I think of, a quick inventory people can do, is these four areas. Do you have a written monthly cash flow plan, mm-hmm, of what is coming in and going out? Do you have an emergency fund? Do you have automated retirement savings? And is there a plan you have to get out of debt? Or how to use debt in the right way, or taking an equity loan, things like that. So really, I think it comes down to that first one, Keith, right? We talk about this a lot.
Right.
We don't want to use this bad word that starts with the letter B, mm-hmm, called the budget, right? you rather call it, and it is, a cash, kind of a cash flow plan. Can you talk a little bit about that? And what I'd like you to do is, just in your experience in working with service members,
okay,
how many service members actually have this, and why do they need to have a cash flow plan built?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And, you know, what I find a lot of times, so cash flow is, you can look at money in one of two ways, right? You can look at money, and if you think about it just as money, then you tend to think about it as spending, because, you know, the value of money is defined by what it will buy. So what's a dollar worth? Well, a dollar could be worth one bag of potato chips, or a dollar could be worth, you know, you pick it, one soda or whatever. And so, you know, it's a store of value whose value is defined by what it will buy. And so if all you think about is money, you know, just think about it in terms of money, then you tend to spend it and you exchange it for what it will buy. What I try to do is get service members to think about the other side of money. Money is actually the building blocks of wealth. And when I talk to them, sometimes I say, what is the difference between wealth and money? Okay. And we kind of go around that a little bit, but what I try to get them to understand is that money is something that you spend, and wealth is an accumulation of money. So wealth represents money unspent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, the way you build wealth, the first step is to not spend. Okay. And so I like to go through this example with them, and I pick a 27-year-old, and I say, okay, you've got 40 years to work to retire. According to Social Security, your normal retirement age or full retirement age is 67. And so if you could save $286 a month, which means live your life in a way where you cannot spend $286 a month, and you could do that consistently for 40 years, right? Then you would have not spent $186,000, mm-hmm. okay? $136,000 rather, okay? Now, that may not seem like a lot to you, but let's suppose you also, instead of just not spending it, you're able to put that money to work, which you can in one of the TSP life cycle funds, and it's not unreasonable to get an average return of about 8%. Instead of having $136,000, you would have $1 million.
So $286 a month over 40 years at 8% is over $1 million.
Right. And so where did that other 860 some odd thousand dollars,
where did it go?
Come from? And everybody will say, well, it's compound interest. Right. That's a way to think about it, just like we could think about the plan as budgeting, right? But we could also think about it as money making money over time for you, mm-hmm. right? Using money to build more money. And that concept of money making money is how people become wealthy, okay? There are no real shortcuts. Some people become wealthy for other reasons, but the vast majority of people, and they're all around us, they live on our streets, we see them on the bus, we see them in drill, they're sitting right next to us, and these people are much wealthier than you would think, and they got there by saving and investing over time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's the difference between money and wealth.
And I think what you lay out there, to me, I love how you coined it. You said you're trying to teach people the other side of building wealth, the mindset, right? Because you're right. If you ask even my kids who are 14 and 16, right, my boys, hey, what's a millionaire look like? They'll describe to you someone that has a plane and that, you know, these. But how did they get there? And sometimes it's inherited wealth. But like to your point, I mean, most of the time it's individuals taking. I like Dave Ramsey on Dave Ramsey's concept is you cannot have more month than money at the end of each month, right?
Very well said.
It's about taking and knowing where your money's going, knowing what you're obligating yourself to and where you're putting your money. And I could tell you, I run into airmen all the time, even officers, enlisted, who will tell you, or they come in and talk and they say, I'm financially in trouble. And then you start asking questions. Well, like, why? I don't make enough. And I could tell you it's mostly not about how much they make. It's about how much they're spending.
Oh, sure.
When it comes down to it.
Sure.
Well, I have control.
And the things you mentioned earlier, right? The cars, the all the outward trappings of wealth that your son was referring to. Mm-hmm. You know, when back in the days at Merrill Lynch, when I would start to cold call, and what I kept thinking, I thought the same thing. I always saw millionaires and wealthy people in terms of the wealth I can see. But let me give you a phrase that I learned and I've used all the time. The more wealth I see, the less wealth there tends to be. Because the things that...
Say that again.
The more wealth I see, the more wealth there tends to be. Mm. So in other words, if I'm judging it by cars, the kind of cars a person drives, the kind of vacations they take, and those sorts of things... Do they tell me how much wealth a person has, or do they tell me how much money a person spends? Mm. And as I said earlier, you know, it's not wealth is money unspent. You can't spend your way to wealth, right? You have to save and invest your way to wealth. But here's the thing that I want to get across to you and our listeners is that a lot of times people will think, now this is a phenomena that I can't totally explain it, but I think I can. But I have gone to these people's homes, these people that have built wealth, mm-hmm. right? And I have seen them drive up and drive away. They all drive reasonable cars, right? I don't see a lot of premium automobiles, but I see a lot of reasonable, mm-hmm. like not cars that are blowing smoke out of the back and barely getting off because, right. you know, they're just saving everything they have. They live in nice homes, well repaired. They usually take vacations. How do people do this and still build wealth? And it's because, like you mentioned earlier, it's that planning aspect. Mm-hmm. It's being able to sit down and plan. There's an old saying, if you don't know where your money's going, you're always going to wonder where it went, right? And so by sitting down and planning, and what these people do is they make wealth building a priority, but they still live. And I always say in my practice, I always say, enjoy life and build wealth. Yeah. You can do both, but you need a plan.
Yeah.
But if you live your life haphazardly, always shooting from the hip, grabbing everything you want, wants are insatiable. And so if I'm trying to satisfy that hole, there's not enough money to satisfy it. I could give you $5 million a year. And if you spend $5 million and $1 a year, you'll still never build wealth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll even say, I did a briefing not too long ago with a group that was about to go overseas. And I asked them, I said, how many people in this room believe that if they just had more money, their problems would go away?
Hands went up.
A lot of hands went up. And what I said is, how many people believe if they just had a better plan?
Yeah, right.
And one or two hands went up, right?
That's it.
And I always say, if you're a spender, giving you more money doesn't solve the problem. It makes it worse. You know, what you need is a way of disciplining yourself so that your money doesn't go to the little stupid things that might make you feel okay for 5 minutes, but it doesn't move the needle for you and your family over time. And it's much better to focus on that house that you want to buy 5 years from now than maybe some of the little things that you could spend your money on. It makes it so you'll never get that house.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's all part of planning.
Well, it is. And I think I asked an unfair question at the beginning, like, hey, what's the percentage of, you know, service members you see that don't have a plan or whatever? But let's get in a little bit of some nuts and bolts here, right? So some of the stuff you were talking, I mean, I'm writing notes down. I'm going to re-listen to this. There's some unbelievable nugget drops there. But it doesn't matter where you are in life, if you're listening to this podcast, when it comes to your finances. But if I were to ask you this question, because some of you listening may already have this figured out, but someone comes in to see you and they don't have a plan and they're talking about wanting to get a plan. What is that first step? What's the first thing you help them do, Keith, to get them on the track to becoming a wealth engine?
Okay. So the first thing that I do, if someone comes to me and says, I want to get out of debt, or we want to buy a house, or I need to start saving for retirement, or any of those things, okay? The first step is to start with your cash flow. And the first thing is to understand it. And so when it comes to like budgeting / cash flow management, there's three parts to it. There's what we call the vision step, okay, which is to understand what does it cost you to live during an average month in your life, okay? And I'm going to stop right there on that one, because that's where we begin. And it's not a creating a budget or anything. It's just strictly data gathering.
I like it.
And what we're trying to understand is what does it cost you to live? Now, in order to do that, there are four types of expenses that you have to understand. And it's important that you get this right, because if you don't get the vision step right, in other words, if you don't understand how much it costs you to live during an average month in your life, then the next step we would do is to try to identify a goal and to figure out how to get there. But the first thing is to understand where you are right now, like today, this minute. Mm-hmm. It's like a GPS. If you ever get in your car, or better yet, now I'm betraying my age, a lot of people are using their phones.
Yep.
So say you take your phone and you're trying to figure out how to get somewhere. If you don't have your current location enabled on your phone, then the GPS will say, can we enable the location finder?
Mm-hmm.
Because what the GPS is saying, in order to tell, I know where you're trying to go. But what I need to know is where you are right now in order to show you how to get there. And so that's what the vision step of the budget is. It's understanding where you are right now. And then we can figure out how to get you out of debt. We can figure out how to get you in that house you're trying to buy. We can figure out how to help you to start saving for retirement. But that's the very first step.
And you mentioned the four expenses.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, no.
Right.
That's four taking expenses. Notes here, as you can see.
So here they are, and you have to get all of these. The first thing is you got to understand your fixed expenses. That's going to be your rent and car payment, insurance payments, things like that. And I use a spreadsheet that I send out, and it's all preformed, preformatted. So you just have to enter in the information. So we want to know the fixed expenses.
Okay. Yep.
And that's easy. People get that right. The second one are what we call variable expenses. And variable expenses are expenses that occur regularly, but the amount changes from month to month. And that's going to be your gas bill, your water bill, you know, utilities in general.
Yeah, right.
Because,
sense.
You know, they're demand based and no month is the same. And so how do you budget? How do you capture that in your vision step? You take a year's worth. Take a year's worth of gas bills or a year worth of water bills or phone bills or grocery bills.
Mm-hmm.
You add them all up and divide them by 12, and that gives you the average.
Okay.
Now, no month may not actually be that average, but in the fullness of a year, you should be pretty close
to the end. Yeah, in that sense.
And people get that right. Mm-hmm. They're pretty close on that. So we have the fixed and variable. But now these next two are where the wheels fall off. Okay, the next two, the first one of those are what we call periodic expenses. And periodic expenses are expenses that occur regularly, but the timing and the amounts are irregular. And so therefore, we don't see them as a real expense, so we leave them off the budget. Let me give you some examples. That would be things like co-pays on our health insurance, clothing, auto maintenance, home maintenance, deductibles on our health insurance, gifts, donations, and contributions,
yeah,
right? These are massive. And a lot of times, like I'll send out the budget worksheet and the service member will fill it out and send it back. And I can look at the budget worksheet and know within 2 seconds whether or not this budget is anywhere near accurate.
Is that right?
And
yeah.
The way I go right to the periodic expenses.
Yeah.
And usually there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. It's like, a problem.
These don't
it's
exist.
A major problem.
Right. And so what this does is if you leave them out, it makes you think you can afford something that you can't really afford.
Yep.
And then once you get in there and you think, well, I don't need to buy clothes. Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. Maybe not for you, but for the kids.
Yeah.
I just wear uniforms all the time. Well, but the last time I checked, they don't replace your uniforms. You do, you
That's
know?
Right.
And on and on with that. And gifts are, you know, for a person that comes from a large family, gifts can be a really big number. And people say, well, how do I budget for gifts? Well, kind of look forward, not backwards, forward, right? Where's my money going?
Yep.
And then figure out how many people you're likely to give a gift to in the coming year and what the occasions are. And then just plug in the amounts per occasion,
yeah.
Add them all up, divide them by 12, and put them in the budget.
Sure.
So that's the fixed, variable, and periodic. The last one are the what I call his and hers miscellaneous.
Okay.
That's your pocket money. That is the, you know what, I need a couple hundred bucks a month in my pocket or $100 a month in my pocket for a coffee and a donut in the morning on the way to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to McDonald's or Burger King at lunchtime. You know, it's my little incidentals that I do myself. Right. And I want a number for that. Right. Because if I don't put a number, then there's no way to know, there's no lines. It just is what it is. And so what I ask them to do is to just put in a number. What do you think you need to get through the month? Well, I need 200. Well, what does your spouse need? He or she needs 200, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 400 on those expenses. Now you have your fixed, variable, periodic, and personal expenses all on the budget worksheet. We go through it a couple times, and now we can see where you are financially.
Like it.
And it could
great.
Be a deficit.
Sure.
Or it could be there's a surplus. And I've seen service members that tell me that they're struggling.
Yep.
They go, oh, they're struggling. You know, we can't seem to bring the money down to the bottom line. So we do the budget worksheet, and we sit down, and we go through it. And there's $500 a month surplus. I say, let's go through it again. We've got our fixed, variable, periodic, and our personal miscellaneous all on the budget worksheet.
Yeah.
And I'm confident we have it.
You have more
and it's showing
yeah.
500, but yet they're struggling.
Struggling, yeah.
What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
And what I tell them is the only way to explain it. So when I do this work here, there's usually one of two kinds of problems. Sometimes there's both, but usually it's one of two. It's either a structural problem where you just own things you shouldn't. Maybe your apartment is too expensive or your car is too expensive. Mm-hmm. So when we do the math, we're accurate and you have a deficit.
Yeah.
So we got to try to figure out how to fix that.
Sure.
The other one is a behavioral problem. And what that means is that your budget should work. You should not be struggling. You're just flat out spending too much money because you're not tracking it.
Impulsive purchases.
Whatever, because we've accounted for everything and there's $500 a month that should be there and it isn't.
It's not there. Yeah.
So that's how we go through those four.
That's great. I could tell you, you know, just sitting down here with you, we're almost going like 30 minutes here. So we're going to wrap up because I think there's enough content that you delivered to anyone listening today. And also anyone listening today, just you heard Keith say this over and over again, and I'm not trying to add more work onto your plate, but if you're listening, Keith is here for you. He has this spreadsheet ready, available. He'll help you with it. He'll walk you through it. Again, he's helped me, and I'm in a different spot than others are, right? I'm coming to the end of my career. He's helped me restructure some retirement, which another topic we can get to, Keith, in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're a part of the 111 Attack Wing and you're listening to this, Keith on Drill Weekends is doing live sessions sort of around a topic like we're talking about on this podcast
both
Saturday and Sunday. So you got to look at Slack and you got to look at some of the advertisements that we're sending out via email and through your chain of command so that you can come and attend these things. And Keith is here for you. And I'll tell you, he'll make time. He has great resources. Again, if you listen to this podcast, you know the background he has. He's not trying to make money off of us. He's trying to keep and put more money in our pockets by helping each of us just understand the power of cash flow so that we become wealth engines. And I just want to summarize kind of what we talked about today here, Keith, as we close off this relaunch of the Balance Podcast, which I'm really excited about, right? We talked a lot today about cash flow and the concept of it's not just a spending only thing. You mentioned about this vision step. That's what you call it. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's your vision where you currently are and what a month looks like. And if you break down the four expense categories, you talked about your fixed expenses, your variable expenses, your periodic, and your miscellaneous. And if you can get a hold of those, you're on your way to becoming that wealth engine, right?
That's right.
Because
you see it.
Yeah.
And you want to make it like what I tell the guys all the time, is that if we can make your life work on paper, right? And a lot of people operate in their heads, right? And they're not, because this goes back to what you said earlier about planning.
Mm-hmm.
And planning is basically just making your life work on paper. And when we sit down and we can start from an accurate location, that's the vision step. Now I see where the money's going.
Yeah.
Now I can start to work with it, right? But if you can make your life work on paper, which means that my expenses are covered, and that includes money I'm putting away for retirement and for the house I'm trying to buy, or I'm paying extra on these debts to get them paid down and all that. It has to work on paper. And if it works on paper, then it will work in real life.
Yeah.
You will
yeah.
make it work. But a lot of times people don't spend the time to make the plan. So they're just out there making moves.
Sure.
And what they don't understand is that these moves aren't working. If you sat down and really looked at it, they're not working.
Yep.
And so hope and a prayer is great, but that's not a strategy. Exactly. It's not a plan.
Exactly.
And so what I want to do is make a plan, and then through hope and prayer, I'm going to make it work.
Combined with it, not yes.
Yeah. It's like the old saying, right? It's like, you know what? We can't do God's job, and God will not do our job.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Amen to that.
And our job is to make a plan and make it work.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I'm actually reminded of the concept of we just need to walk. We need to take a step forward, and the path becomes clear as you move forward.
You go.
The path doesn't become clear when you just sit there and stuck in mud. You got to do something with it.
What's that?
I want to ask you, if you're comfortable with this, would you share, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Will you share either your phone number and or email address?
Yeah.
With those that are listening.
So the best way is shoot me an email. That's always the best way to go. And the email is PFC for Personal Financial Counselor, PFC PFC.Horsham, H-O-R-S-H-A-M, at MagellanFederal.com. And Magellan Federal is the contractor that I work under. And that's the best way to do it. So if you shoot me that email, because a lot of times people will call and leave half a message or whatever, and we play phone tag. But that email, I answer emails a lot of times during the day, 10 o'clock at night, and I'm always checking my email and always responding.
Great.
And then what I will do is I'll come back to you, and you know, it's just a matter of scheduling, whether it's by phone or whether it's online by Zoom, or you know, you stop into the office, but we'll figure out a way to get together. Because I know a lot of the folks from here, they're not actually here.
That's right.
Every day.
That's right.
I know they're
our part-time, like, certainly
are other
here.
States, yeah. And things like that. Yeah. So a lot of times with that, that would be Zoom or phone call. Yeah. But it's pfc.horsham at magellanfederal.com.
Excellent. And look, again, Keith is here to help. Keith is here, has a wealth of knowledge. He wants to set you up for success. You have to just take a step. You have to make this step to just say, I don't know what I don't even know. I listen to the podcast. That sounds great. Help me. And he will get this kicked off for you. And again, we're going to re-engage each other again here on the Balance Podcast, because I think this is a topic that's so relevant for us. Again, if your finances are in order, your security clearances are in jeopardy, your family relationships are in jeopardy, your future is in jeopardy, right? And this could all be done by creating this vision step and vision plan that Keith's going to get you.
And if I could say one last thing on that, which is important, because a lot of folks are sitting out there and they're going, well, things are going to get better. They know things aren't right, and they think things are going to get better over time. And I want to make sure that they understand that time is not a fixer. Mm. Time is a compounder.
Lying.
Okay? So if I'm struggling, and a lot of times I'm struggling because there's something I'm missing, there's some information, there's something I'm not doing properly. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm struggling. And a lot of guys think, well, it's just have, you know, a little bit of bad luck. Sometimes that is, but right. Most times it isn't. Yeah. Like we said earlier, you know, you were mentioning about failure to plan and things like, a lot of guys don't. And so they're just making moves, okay? And so now I'm digging myself into a hole. And then you think time is going to bail you out. But if I consistently do A, like A course of action, mm-hmm. right? And I consistently do it, over time, I'm going to get A squared. I'm not going to get B, right? So if what I'm doing is taking me deeper into trouble, I'm just going to get deeper in trouble. Compounding it.
Yeah.
And what I have to do is take a new course. And sometimes it's just a very small adjustment.
Sure.
Executed over time that takes me in a totally different direction. And then I am going to get the compounding effects of time in my favor.
Yeah.
Right? So time is not a fixer. It's a compounder.
Awesome way to end this session together. Again, thank you so much, Keith, for sitting down, for helping our airmen out, their families, for just being a great asset to our wing. Because you sit here at Horsham, at Beale Air National Guard Base in Horsham, but knowing that you're here for all service members. Again, I hope that those listening today, you find this content relevant. Again, we call this the Balance Podcast because really, I want to see you grow in those four areas. I want you to be whole. I want you to be healthy, and it doesn't matter what rank you are, it doesn't matter what your background is. That's really what I care about, is delivering some really good information that could be practical for you so that you can be successful for the rest of your life. So with that, this is Chaplain Tony Repick and Keith Donnell. Thank you for tuning in today to the Balance Podcast, and we are out.
Thank you.